Morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
There is interest in reading and discussing Dogen in the practice circle. So I want to say a few words about Dogen. And I was thinking, I just saw the movie Everest and all the preparation that was involved, and they would have to go to a certain altitude and get acclimated to that altitude and like that before they went up the mountain because of the rarefied air. So it occurred to me that studying Dogen is like trying to climb Mount Everest. A lot of preparation is required. So I'm going to read some excerpts from this book, which is sort of a compilation of different things that Dogen has said. And it's called The Essential Dogen, Writings of the Great Zen Master. The two authors, or the two editors of Dogen's things said by Dogen are Kazuaki Tanahashi and Peter Levitt. And Kazuaki Tanahashi is a renowned artist as well as a Buddhist scholar and translator. His translations include Enlightenment Unfolds, Treasury of the True Dharma Eye, and Sky Above, Great Wind, The Life and Poetry of Zen Master Ryokan. And Peter Levitt is also a poet and translator whose numerous books of poetry include 100 Butterflies and Within, Within. In addition, he is the author of Finger Painting on the Moon, Writing and Creativity as a Path to Freedom. He is also the guiding teacher of the Salt Spring Zen Circle in British Columbia. So these guys put this together. So the question is, or the first question is, who is Dogen? Dogen was an extraordinary thinker, visionary, poet, writer, scholar, teacher, introducer of Zen, leader of a spiritual community, and reformer of Buddhism in Japan. He is emerging as one of the most widely read and studied Buddhists in the Western world. More than 60 books in English with his name on their covers are available now. Yet his writings are often technical, paradoxical, enigmatic, and repetitive. Dogen was ordained as a monk at the age 14. He started studying Zen at the age of 18 and went to China to complete his study between the ages of 24 and 28. He established his first training center, Kosho Monastery, when he was 34, and started building a full-scale monastery in the remote province of Echizen at age 44, which was established the following year. And Dogen died when he was 54. He has one great compilation, which is the source of much study of Dogen, and it's called The Treasury of the True Dharma Eye. Most of you probably know it as the Shobo Genzo. And that's basically his life work. There's another massive collection of his works, and it includes formal talks, monastic guidelines, and other types of talks and writings compiled, and they're all compiled by his senior students. And there's a book called Dogen's Extensive Record, Translation of the Ihei Koroku. That's by Taigan Dan Layton, who you may be familiar with, and Shohaku Okamura. And it's an excellent translation of his various writings. There are also other books about Dogen. As I mentioned, there's many, but some of the more well-known are Moon in a Dewdrop, Enlightenment Unfolds, and Beyond Thinking. One of the ways that Dogen is separated from Zen, and Zen in particular, is his use of language. So no matter how compelling or beautiful words may be, they appeal mainly to linear thinking, to the mind that thinks in words. And ultimately, our cognitive faculty can only provide a partial understanding. And words are only one way to know. And this knowing, this linear knowing, is incomplete. At the same time, words, language are an expression of enlightenment. As a master of language, Dogen's usage was penetrating and poetic in the extreme. Well aware of its limitations, he developed a mode of expression to convey Dharma that engages more of the human capacity for understanding than just the thinking mind, though certainly, as when he was at pains to meticulously describe the practice of meditation or provide temple guidelines, his writing was prescriptive and clear. Many of the practices found in Zen communities today are performed most exactly as Dogen has described. When it came to a nuanced expression of Dharma, however, he spun words and turned phrases constantly, often creating new meanings on the spot, or using the same words and phrases to make a point in the first moment and then to contradict the very point in the next moment. His teachings, on occasion delivered past midnight during intensive periods of practice, might even be seen as a kind of linguistic acrobatics, a compelling, clarifying, and often confusing explosion of sentences that rely on subtlety, invention, piercing insight, and realized expression to embody his meaning and help students fulfill their deepest aspirations. Filled with images, metaphor, logic, and illogic, in addition to stories taken from the storehouse of Buddha's teachings and the literature of Zen, which he would present in a manner that often overturned traditional interpretations. And an example of that is Zen Yan, a famous Zen teacher. One of his statements is often quoted. And he said, "Painted cakes do not satisfy hunger." And typically what that's meant is painted cakes are words, right? But they're not the same thing as having a meal, right? So you can envision painted cakes. You can create ideas and words to describe it, but it's not the same thing if you're hungry as eating. So that's the relationship between words and the thing itself. But Dogen pointed out that painted cakes are also an expression of enlightenment. Now, the language that Dogen uses is referred to as intimate language. And the koan where it says, "not knowing is most intimate." Well, this is another way to penetrate the practice. And it's through the use of intimate language. Dogen's use of what he called intimate language, like words and turning phrases of the Buddha ancestors who came before him, is rooted in the non-dual experience of realization. So what he does is he uses the relative, which is words, to express the absolute. And he does this to help students yield the grip of linear discriminative thinking and turn the mind toward an understanding of things as they truly are. And he's considered one of the greatest pre-contemporary postmodern deconstructionists. That's a mouthful. Now, a little aside, and I'll get back to something about this later, but Dogen's teachings were offered to women and men, and lay and monastics. So he, true to his language, excluded no one. Challenging as these teachings were, Dogen's use of words to undo words, and his twirling of concepts to unravel concepts, help students to embrace his instruction to study intimately, his credo in all things, until the lock of discriminative thinking fell away and their practice deepened to where thinking beyond thinking became the activity of Zazen itself. So there's another Dogen. Thinking beyond thinking. For Dogen, Zazen, that activity that we do every week, is the heart and bones of Zen. And he's, of course, known for that famous statement, "We don't sit to become enlightened. We sit because we are already enlightened." And he would refer to that as our original wholeness. So many of us are not aware of it. We're not in contact with it, and we may be aware of it in concepts and words, but haven't experienced our original wholeness. But we are originally whole. We are originally enlightened. And so, as Dogen said, the experience of this original wholeness is when I have dropped away body and mind. So that's a little bit of an introduction to Dogen, and I'm glad that you bared with me. But I thought it's important, if we're going to think about reading and talking about Dogen, that, like climbing Mount Everest, we're prepared. So I'm going to continue to talk about Dogen for a couple of weeks. Now, I mentioned in there that Dogen gave the Dharma to women as well as men. And it's extremely rare that we ever hear women mentioned in the history of Zen. Or when we talk about famous Zen teachers, they're always male. So I had this idea, and this is just my thoughts on it, and I'll mention for a few weeks, and maybe I'll give you a copy of this bill, and you could put it out in the newsletter. But I'd like feedback, particularly from women, but also from men. And so I called it the Gatha for Women Who Have Been Forgotten. This bell rings for Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva of compassion. This bell rings for women throughout history whose names have been forgotten or left unsaid. This bell rings for women of the present so that they are never left unremembered. This bell rings to remind us that the way excludes no one.